There's a series of talks that will be given by a number of you who are here, as well as John will kick things off and help focus it. And then we also want to have a talk about the charter of this working group, too. It's changed considerably from way it began, and so we think it's important that we revisit that and see what kind of things are percolating in your minds about what we ought to focus on here. So, and the last bullet, obviously, is that this material is already up on the wiki, I guess, at this point, right, John? Maybe not?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. But it will be. It will be shortly. So, Patrick, you are queued up next.
All right, well, good afternoon, everybody. I have a really easy job today, three or four parts. The first part is I think I can say with confidence that the agenda that we have in place is actually worthwhile. It's actually worth everyone's time, which I think is an important thing to establish at the start of any sort of meeting. This is something that I've been in arguments about, and I'm now convinced that this is actually something that's important. I'm really just going to be watching the clock and trying to keep people on schedule for this sort of middle portion of our agenda here concerning the generalized aggregate manager interfaces. That probably doesn't mean anything very specific to any of you, and that's a big reason why it's the meat of our agenda here. And so these three sub-bullets to sort of roadmap this for you just a little bit. John is first going to introduce the language and the abstractions that we should all be familiar with. No doubt, Genie overall is a very complex and unwieldy beast, and even within substrates, there are a lot of terms floating around that people use in very different ways. And what John's going to be presenting is quite useful because he's really going to be presenting to you the language and the abstractions that the GPO uses to look at all of our work. So it's very helpful to understand how they view things. Then we're going to have some actual examples of people who are taking substrates and connecting them meaningfully to control frameworks. And then in the third and final component of this section here, we'll have a few attempts at generalizing these aggregate interfaces somewhat, both to encompass things like different types of substrates like wireless, but also different qualities of substrates, including measurement. So as a plan, it all sticks together. None of the folks presenting have gotten together and coordinated to make sure that it all makes sense. Hopefully we will, and since we're a smart crowd of people, I'm sure we can draw all the right connections in between. Okay, so the bulk of our time is going to be in this section here today. So if you're speaking and I wave my hand at you, that means that you've got that number of minutes left in your presentation. The other thing all the presenters ought to know is our assumption is that you're going to be using your own laptop. So please have everything queued up and ready to go as efficiently as you can so that we can come up and do the swap. We didn't collect them in advance. And so I guess, Rob, after John, you're the first one up. And at this point, John, why don't you take it away?
Okay, so what we're trying to understand is some details about aggregate managers. And, you know, from the GPO perspective, the aggregate manager is the interface between substrates and the control framework. And this defines much of the tasks when we talk about vertical integration. It's how you get your substrate communicating with your control framework so that your substrate can be used and controlled, et cetera. So we in the prototype clusters, we have aggregate managers are going to be defined by your cluster's control framework, be it Orbit, Orca, Planet Lab, Protogenie, Tide, et cetera. Eventually, and we don't know where this is going yet, but eventually there may be only one NSF Genie control framework. Who knows? But at this and as such, there would be a Genie aggregate manager. But at this point in time, there is no such thing as a Genie aggregate manager. So it's the aggregate manager defined by your control framework, and they could be very different and implemented in very different ways. And that's what this Spiral 1 prototyping is about. So this is a picture that the GPO has been floating around now for a while. It's this Genie system decomposition. It's mostly that of a control framework, all the elements in a control framework. You see a Gini clearinghouse at the top and federations, operations, et cetera, et cetera. Aggregates are these columns along the bottom, and there's many different aggregates. And if you look inside this box, it's hard to see on the slides, but if you from a distance, but it says component manager. Component manager and aggregate managers can sometimes be used interchangeably. But just want to stress the point that this is where your network, your technologies, your substrate technologies are integrated into the control framework through this thing called an aggregate manager. Okay. Now, what we're going to hear today are some very specific implementations of how various substrates have integrated at this point into their control frameworks. And I'm referring to these as stovepipe, not in any sort of negative connotation, but just to say that it's because they're focused on getting exactly what they have to get done up and running on a very aggressive schedule with limited funds, et cetera. And what we want, and so we're gonna have some discussions around that, some presentations. I think that'll be good to level set everyone so that we have a common language and understanding, and we can begin to discuss aggregate managers and vertical integration from how things are actually being done. Then after that's all said and done, we want to take a step back and say, does it make sense? Are we seeing duplication of effort here? Does it make sense that there could be something that could be, that there could be some unification for a Gini aggregate manager, something to think of down the road? And that's what the last two talks are going to begin to hint at, ways where some unification generalization makes sense. So the bottom is a little bit off now. One of our speakers had to pull out at the last minute. So we actually have four Spiral 1 implementations covering both wired and wireless technologies, and we have two generalized topics, one for wired and one for measurements. And with that, Rob, also to the speakers, if someone asks a question, please repeat it, because things are being recorded through the microphone, taped through the microphones.
Okay, so John asked me to talk a little bit about how the vertical integration works in the Proto-Gini control framework, and specifically with the, how we're doing this with the Emulab software. So vertical integration here meaning how we get from a request for resources to actually configuring those resources and making them available to users. So the Proto-Gini project is four different things. The part that I'm going to talk about today is just the component manager part. So the Proto-Gini component manager is built on the Emulab software, and the Emulab software is all about configuring networks, about bringing up nodes or components in Gini terms and configuring connections between them. The Emulab software has been developed at Utah for almost 10 years now, and is deployed at about 25 different institutions to control test beds. So basically, what we're doing for as far as building a component manager for Proto-Gini ourselves is to build it on top of the Emulab software. Emulab supports supports the configuration of wired PCs, wireless PCs, switches, Planet. You can make slices on Planet Lab using the Emulab software, and it has some support for virtualized experimentation right now using jails and FreeBSD or OpenVZ and Linux, and we also have some support for configuring sensor network nodes. The ones with stars on them are ones that are not currently available through the Proto-Gini component manager interface. The other ones all are. The reason that I've pointed out here that switches are shared is that in our current implementation, switches are viewed as infrastructure, not devices that people are experimenting on directly. This is something we're going to be working on as part of our Gini work. The way that we configure these things is using a number of different control channels, actually. All the components that are under our control are on Ethernet networks running IP, and we use a couple standard protocols to control these things. So we use DHCP and network boot for PCs. I'll talk bit more about that in a minute. And SNMP, of course, which is also a standard protocol, we have two private protocols for controlling resources. One called TMCD, which I will also talk about more later, and another event system that is basically, it's a simple publish-subscribe system so that components can register to hear information about actions they're supposed to take or actions that have been taken by other components. And then where possible, we also have serial consoles and power control over these things. So that basically if experimenters somehow manage to mess up the network, we can still get in on the serial console, and if we really, really have to, we can just turn the thing off and back on. And of course, turning the thing off and back on is mostly something we resort to for components that are not being shared, right? And we have two strategies for actually configuring components once a request has been made. So the one that is used on most of our components is a pull strategy, and we use this for PCs and other components that are rich enough that basically one can, you know, write software that runs on them. So, and the basic strategy here is that we set up some state describing the configuration we would like the component to have, and then whenever that component boots, it checks in and it gets configuration parameters at boot time. We also control some resources that are things like catalyst switches running CatOS and iOS, where you're not writing code that runs on the switches itself. And so we use a push model for these, where we come up with where we have a centralized location that pushes new configurations out to these things. So making a sliver in the pull model, essentially when we create a sliver, when we say that we've created a sliver, what this really means is that we've created some database state that describes that sliver, and then we're going to make that into an actual usable sliver by booting the component. So in the case of a whole PC that we're going to configure, this means actually physically booting the PC. Or in the case of some kind of slice component, this might mean, you know, contacting the component and telling it, okay, I've got the slice you need to boot. We add hooks into in the case of a PC, into the operating system image, that basically when the thing boots, it checks back in with our central database. This hook needs to be done in one place, like in the RC scripts on a Linux distribution or something like this. So the protocol that this uses is the TMCD, which is the testbed master control daemon, I believe, which is more or less a database proxy. So the idea is that the component is going to get information from the database about what user accounts it ought to have created, what file systems it should have mounted, what addresses it should configure on its interfaces, and this sort of stuff. And then we have some client scripts that basically turn this sort of fairly generic, the interface with MAC address A should have IP address B, and these client-side scripts that fetch this information actually then go and do the component-specific configuration. So for example, we support a bunch of different operating systems. All of them have the same information returned to them by TMCD, and then we sort of port these client scripts to take that sort of generic information and to know that they're running on Linux or FreeBSD or Windows or whatever, and actually have the knowledge of how to turn that generic information into specific configuration, which has the nice advantage of somebody adding a new operating system or component type primarily only needs to worry about what needs to happen on the within their component, rather than changing the component manager itself. So, In the push model, we use the push model right now for switches. We have support for several different vendors, for sensor network nodes and for network processor cards. And the types of configurations that are pushed out are generally sort of much more device dependent. So, you know, we have to have different modules for pushing out VLAN configurations and so forth to, you know, every one of the switch vendors that we support. And in some cases, we push this configuration through a host PC. So, for example, many of the network processors we support, like the NetFPGA cards from Stanford and Intel's IXPs, are hosted in some other PC. And essentially what we need to do in this case is boot the PC, log into that thing, and push the configuration through a PCI interface or something like this to the cards. So this kind of model works well for devices that are sort of impoverished and or not, as far as computational resources go, and or less programmable. But it does tend to require a lot more work inside the component manager as opposed to on the component itself. So sort of a diagram to show you how this stuff is put together. So we've got a user here who wants to configure some, create a slice on some components that are the little hexagons down here. The control network that I mentioned right here, and then these components have some configuration to the experimental network. And then here is our aggregate manager, which you'll notice is not running on the components themselves. It's running sort of as a separate server that is in control of a number of components. So the user comes to the aggregate manager. I won't talk a lot about the details of this, but basically authenticates themselves and presents an RSpec that describes the network that they want to have built. They're talking to the component manager API within EmuLab here. We take this RSpec that they provide and basically convert it to an internal representation that includes things like the VLANs that we've decided that we're going to create, and or the addresses that we've chosen to assign to the components interfaces, or this kind of thing. And we return to the user a ticket that they can use now to actually request that those get instantiated. And when they do redeem that ticket and request and actually instantiate their slivers, we start by creating slivers on the components. And as I mentioned before, at this stage, what we've done is we've actually created the slivers by representing them in the database. And we'll get to actually making them sort of real virtual machines in a second, virtual or physical machines in a second. We use SNMP through the same control network to configure the experimental network, which is where we're creating the actual topology that the user has requested. And so we, let's say in this case, make a couple VLANs between some of the interfaces on these PCs. And so this would be an example of the push model. And then later, when the user comes out and says they want to actually start the sliver, this basically means they want to boot the components. So we've made an intentional decision here that's slightly different than what is in the current Genie API documents, which is that when one redeems a ticket and the sliver is logically created, we don't boot it yet at that time, because the idea is that one might want to replace the disk contents before booting it, or install another operating system on it, or do some kind of pre-boot configuration. So we've intentionally separated these out into two steps. So when the user comes in and asks us to start the sliver, we then basically send a message, and I've drawn this as coming over the control network. It can actually come in a number of different ways. For exclusive use resources that are raw PCs, we may actually be booting the thing. So the control might be power on. In the case of something that's a shared slice, it might be sending a message to it basically saying you've got this, you have this virtual machine that you need to start up now. So these things turn green as they actually boot. And then they check back in with TMCD over the control network, and TMCD is going to tell them things like what interfaces they need to configure, what user accounts they need to make, and things like this. And then when we're all set up, the user uses this control network to actually log in and access the slivers that have been set up for them. And that's my animation of how this works, and I'd be happy to take questions. Yeah, go for it, John.
Now, in GPO, we have a very simple way to talk about aggregate managers. It may be oversimplified, but we say that an aggregate manager speaks two languages. On one side, it speaks native GDP.
Yeah.
It seems like a TMCD would be that where that native genie would be stored at, and then the script would be the subject specific languages. But in the push model, it seemed like I didn't see a native genie control. It seemed like you had to have the equivalent of what you had in scripts kind of hardwired into the TMCD.
Okay, so I would say that the native genie in this picture is, let me go back a couple more slides. Is this thing. So what the user is interacting with is the component manager API, and they're passing in an RSpec that describes the sliver that they want created. And so this is what I would describe as being the native genie piece. And what I would say happens then on the back end, right?
Oh.
That's right. That's right.
At some point, you have to begin to control, say, you want to provision switches, you want to set up a topology and provision those. So there's going to be some generic, is there a generic control framework language to say, set up topology, set up bandwidth, et cetera. Then I guess translate it down to your HP, your whatever version vendor of the topology.
Yeah, so getting a ticket here, right, is exactly that step, right? So this RSpec describes things like, I would like to get slices of two PCs and have, 200 megabits of connectivity between them. So this description here includes the sort of the low level configuration of that you want the resources to have. Okay.
What do I have to do to get that control of the TMCD?
Okay, so in the case of switches, we use the push model, right? So this step here where I pushed out via SNMP, right? You would need to write a new module that understands that specific vendor, and a lot of sites have done that. That module resides in a piece of software called Snippet. That is part of the Emulab software.
And are those well defined? There's an API for that?
Yes, basically there is a module API where for every vendor that is supported, right, there is a vendor specific module, and there are certain API calls that it has to implement. Yeah.
So the
whole piece of software is called Snippet, SNMP it. great creative name. its job, and the top level SNMP it program is the one that reads things out of this Emulab database into which we've parsed the RSpec. And then the vendor specific models only have to know how to respond to requests like make a VLAN with these two ports.
Okay.
So there are, a number of ways that one could choose to integrate, right? One could choose to integrate with the Protogini control framework by writing an entirely new aggregate manager that supports the same API, right? And at least one project that is integrating with us is going to be doing that. If one has something that looks like a collection of, you know, PCs with wired or wireless or optical interfaces, right, then it does make sense to go ahead and modify the existing Emulab code base to make it act as a component manager for that specific thing. And the two places that you are likely to have to do implementation work are, you know, adding support to the SNMP code, if it is something like a switch, if it is something that looks more like a PC that is capable enough of checking in on its own and requesting its configuration, then these client-side scripts that receive information from TMCD would be the right place to do it.
And Rob, to follow up, I think of those snippets as sort of like device drivers for each vendor's product.
That's a perfect way to think about it.
And so each time then that vendor releases either a new version of the box or a new operating system version, you have to make changes to that code, correct?
That is generally not true, because the SNMP interface exported by the vendors tends to stay pretty stable. There are a couple of cases where we've had vendors update, you know, come out with new products that broke backwards compatibility with the SNMP interface. But generally, the vendors are pretty good about making sure that the SNMP interface is stable across the lifetime of the product. So we don't, you know, in general, the times when we have to do work on that code is to maybe support a new product within an existing line or something like this, but generally not, you know, once I got it working for the Catalyst 6500s, right, I have not had to keep that updated as new iOS versions came out or whatever. Yeah. Okay, so I think if there are no more questions, I'm done. Thank you.
Thank you. So I'm going to talk about integrating the Orca control framework that was designed by Jeff Chase and his group over a number of years to the BEN, Breakable Experimental Network, substrate. We're working in Research Triangle Park, North Carolina. So I'll talk about the substrate first, and then I'll talk about how we're integrating Orca to it. So BEN is a metro-scale dark fiber facility. Our longest link is somewhere in the order of 25, 26 miles. There are no amplifiers on the path. We have four POPs on campuses, one at UNC Chapel Hill, Duke, NCSU, and one at RENC main office. And BEN, as an experimental facility, basically is in the business of providing power, space, and cooling at each of the POPs for experiments to run there, for researchers to run their experiments. We also have out-of-band management network and remote power management brought onto those facilities. Now, RENC, as a participant in this project, has brought in some equipment to place in those to run essentially as an experiment on BEN. And so you see on the right we have a fairly simple topology, and each POP looks approximately like this. At the bottom we have a Pilatus fiber switch, which allows us to splice fiber in and out, and it also allows us to splice experimental equipment into the fiber. And then what RENC brought as substrate to this project is reconfigurable DWDM platform, Infinera DTNs, on top of which we have routers, Cisco 6509s, and then there are several blades at each site which serve as a VM substrate. So essentially each site looks approximately like this. So there's a picture of one of the POPs. Again, there's a Pilatus fiber switch, a DTN right there, and there's a Cisco 6509, and a few blades here in the center on which we actually create the edge for creating edge resources. So before I explain sort of the horizontal and vertical views of this project, I thought that it would be important to touch on some architectural points within ORCA to explain at what point the substrate is actually being touched by ORCA actors. So one important concept to understand is ORCA is a fully distributed system. It has a number of actors of three basic types: a broker, which corresponds to a clearinghouse, a service manager, which corresponds to a slice controller, and a site authority, which corresponds to an aggregate manager. They're all Java-based agents that can be run within a single Tomcat container, or they could be fully distributed across different sites. And they all follow a state machine, at least state machine, for actually allocating slices. So the one transition that is missing out of this diagram when the time flows from left to right is the transaction between the site authority and the broker that delegates resources from that site to the broker. In other words, the site authority can say, I will have six virtual machines for you. If you ever give somebody a ticket, I can give them any number of between one and six virtual machines. Or I can connect two sites with VLANs, and I have 100 VLAN tags available for that. So what you see here is actually the process of acquiring a lease on a slice. So it begins with a service manager or slice manager requesting resources from a broker, receiving a ticket for those resources, and then redeeming the ticket with the site authority or aggregate manager. So this is the point where, at first, the substrate is touched. The site authority can talk to something called a driver, I'll show it in a minute, that provides the initial slivering of the substrate. Once that is done, and the site authority transitions into active state for that lease, a second time the substrate is touched is by the slice controller or service manager after it has received basically the initial allocation of resources. And so in the VM world, it can correspond to a situation where a site authority creates the initial Xen virtual machine, and the service manager can load specific software on the allocated virtual machine. So the same driver is used in both situations. However, the actions performed by them could be quite different. Incidentally, for a network substrate like switches, routers, and DWDM platforms, majority of driver actions happen here, when the site authority initially slivers that network element. We so far have not found any use for service manager or slice controller to actually doing the configuration. However, it's there. So this is actually a view of the demo we showed last night. It was quite simple. We had two sites, RENC site and Duke site. There were two blades at each site. These rectangles are blades. And one extra controller blade, which actually hosted most of the ORCA software. So this shows the Tomcat container in which the actors were running. So they were all running within a single container. So we had a broker, we had a service manager or slice controller. We had three site authorities, one for RENC VMs, one for Duke VMs, and one for VLANs. As you can see, we have two networks essentially. And Ben, I mentioned we have a management network. So there's a management network that's run over commodity internet using basically a set of it's a full mesh of secure tunnels. Because we have a fully distributed test bed, we really have no other option. And then the data plane for experiments is run over the dark fiber. And so for the demo yesterday, we were using just 2 6509s with a statically configured link in between them. So the Pilatus switches and the DTNs were here, but they were statically configured to fast traffic. We weren't touching them as part of the slice creation. One thing is that the portal, the web
so
portal.
Excuse me, Elliot.
Yes.
Could you stand closer to the mic?
Yes.
So
I will take it with me. So, as I said, as part of the demo last night, we left this link static. We were simply touching the 6509s to actually put the VLAN tags in them and remove them, but we weren't actually reconfiguring dynamically this link between them. But that is definitely, this is our next step. So, and I'll talk about this in a second. So if you if you're looking for some more of a vertical view, I guess in the Genie speak, this is sort of what it looks like. We have experimenter represented by the service manager or slice controller that talks to the broker and talks to site authorities. And this same service manager can also directly talk to the drivers running the substrate. Depending on the, so different types of substrate have different drivers, and also different locations can have different driver instances. So if we look at this previous picture here, each blade which can instantiate VMs is running a piece of Java code called a node agent, which essentially is something that sits there and listens for commands to do certain things on mainly with that blade, but we also use them as a proxy for network equipment. I'll get to that in a second. So for instance, there's each node node agent is loaded with a VM driver, which talks to Xen to create VMs on that physical machine. And this driver can be can be told to do certain things with the VM or with Xen by either the site authority or by the slice controller or service manager. As I said, the two steps are creating virtual machine and configuring it for a specific experiment. So the creation of virtual machine is done by the corresponding site authority. In this case, it would be the Duke site authority right there. And then the configuration could be done. For instance, if you wanted to load, if you wanted to create a Globus cluster, you could, for instance, do it that way. You could have the site authority allocate you a cluster of machines and then have the slice controller / service manager load Globus software on those VMs. So getting back to the view again, the driver is really sort of the main interface to your substrate. And it has to reside in some node agent. So with the VMs, it's quite simple because it just resides on the physical node on which VMs are instantiated. With network substrate, we use kind of a proxy mechanism. So if you look at the previous picture, one of the blades actually had a 6509 driver sitting in it. It actually wasn't talking, the driver had nothing to do with that machine, and it could be separated in a completely separate host. We just did it for simplicity, such that we could talk to the network substrate, in this case the 6509s, through that driver. And as you can see, the blue lines show who can issue commands to the driver. And that is basically the site authority for initial slivering and the service manager for follow-on configuration. In the case of network slices, there's a third step which is really done by the service manager, and that's the stitching of the different allocated components into a single slice. And so right now we do it by sequencing in a certain order the actions of creating different slivers. However, we would like to solve this problem in a more general sense by introducing kind of a two-pass system where the first step is allocation of resources and the second step is stitching. To give you an example of why we need that, for instance, in the Orca world, when you as an experimenter get a ticket to a number of VMs at a certain site, you actually don't know which physical machines they will be allocated on. And of course, when you're trying to create a VLAN between that group of VMs and another, it is important for you, for configuring the network substrate, in this case the 6509 Cisco router, to know which physical machines the VMs were created on in order so that you can create the VLAN configurations on the specific ports to which those machines are connected to. And so that is the problem we plan to address, like I said, in a more general sense, where we have a two-pass system where at first we do the allocation of resources, then the information about the specific resources allocated, like the specific hardware, the specific machines on which the VMs were instantiated, is passed back to the service manager so that it can send that information to other site authorities so that they can make informed decisions about how to configure their parts of the substrate. So this is sort of an example of what we were showing last night. We were showing a couple of slices, just a few VMs in each because we're limited in our VM substrate capabilities. And again, depending on what order you executed these and how many VMs you asked for in each slice, this picture could be different. And was completely dependent on the state of the system at that time. You would still get, you know, two machines on each end, two machines on the other if you wanted to, but which physical hosts those virtual machines were hosted on was not clear until you actually redeemed the ticket you received from the broker. So we demonstrated that last night. We had basically isolation between slices and communication between slices. It's a fairly simple example for now as a sort of crawl before you walk. So where we're going with all of this, as I mentioned, we have the Pilatus fiber switches. We would like to instrument those. They expose two types of interfaces, TL1 and SNMP. And right now our money is on TL1. Basically, they allow us to set up cross-connects between certain fiber ports. Those switches also have some measurement capabilities for basically input and output power, and we're actually very interested in exploiting those capabilities as part of this project. So we would like to include those capabilities as part of the measurement plane of the substrate. The DTN platforms, again, they expose a very comprehensive TL1 interface. And from our perspective, what we would like to do is both leverage the path computation capability that they have in them. In other words, if I need a connection between two sites, I would like to be able to tell a DTN, please give me a circuit of this bandwidth between yourself and this other site, and have GMPLS figure it out for us. However, because I do need to do proper resource accounting inside Orca, I need to be able to peek at its TED, traffic engineering database, after it's done what it's done so that I can update my resource usage. And the other is the explicit setup where we say, DTN1, DTN2, DTN3, set up your cross connects in such a way and assign such a bandwidth to these cross connects because we're setting up a path. But in this case, individual DTNs don't actually know anything about the path being set up. They just know about the local cross connect state that's being established. Another point is, right now our resource requests and resource descriptions are essentially tables. Resource type and resource quantity, which is not sufficient to describe what we want, like topologies and adaptations between layers in the network. So we are in the process of adopting NDL, network description language, as our substrate description and slice specification mechanism. It is basically an OWL, it's an OWL language designed at University of Amsterdam by Kees de Laet and his group, and we're adopting and extending it. We already have the description of Ben in NDL of the three layers starting from fiber through circuits and then to the packet layer. So at this point we're designing the API that allows us to do inferences and some rudimentary path computation on this. So that's really what this bullet is about. We're starting with path validation. In other words, if somebody gives me a slice description in NDL and I have a substrate description in NDL, can I actually verify that the slice description is valid based on that for that substrate? For instance, is it trying to create a path that physically is not possible to create? Finally, for VM substrate, we're really not in the business of don't want to be in the business of creating VMs. Zen is a capricious animal, and we'd like to simplify that process as much as we can. So we're in the process of reviving some of the work that's been done with Orca and being able to use Eucalyptus as a VM substrate controller. And also extending, we plan to replace Zen with VMware also so that we can use their fairly robust APIs to create virtual machines and attach them to slices. So future steps. As I showed you, all the actors in the original demo that we showed last night were running in a single Tomcat container. Which is great for demo, but really we would like to validate and show that the system is fully distributed. So in the near term, we're planning to start moving the site authority actors onto the sites that they belong to. So in other words, by our next demo, We'd like to show that the Duke site authority can reside at Duke and doesn't really have to be in the same container with all the other actors. This is, you know, the code exists for this, we just haven't really tested it very well yet. And essentially all other sites on Ben would look like this. I mean, the picture is just getting too crowded, but you would get a site authority of that site residing within the site and communicating over SOAP to broker and service manager slash slice controller. This also shows the integration of the DTNs and the Pilatus switches as, again, our future steps. So as you can see, somewhere we will have to have a machine that has a node agent with 6509 driver, DTN driver, and Pilatus driver so that we can actually talk to them and configure their state according to the specific slice requirements. So that was the horizontal view, and the vertical view would be like this. Again, it's just an extension of where we are at now. You have the site authority for Ben, which will be responsible for for the dark fiber as well as the network elements residing in Ben. And then you will have the VM site authority. So here we're showing RANC and Duke, but we can also have one for NC State, which is one of the other sites, and UNC Chapel Hill. And so basically all these, to some extent, will be fully distributed such that, you know, we can demonstrate the distributed nature of the system, where each site is in full control of the substrate that they own. It can delegate only the parts of the substrate that they're comfortable with delegating. That's my last slide.
All right, I have a few questions.
Sure. Yep.
Right.
It's somewhat a little bit more complicated. The drivers are invoked by handlers. Handlers have the higher level logic, and drivers are literally what you think. They're low level mechanisms to affect commands onto the substrate. But the higher level logic resides with the handlers, which resides with site authorities and also within the service manager.
Okay.
There's some pushing up, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And you have APIs defined to do this, so people come in and
we have template drivers and template handlers.
Okay.
So that exists today.
Now, because of the fact that, earlier you mentioned that the site authority you equated that to an aggregate manager.
No, site authority is, yes, sorry, yes, site authority is aggregate manager, sorry. Yes.
Wouldn't the aggregate manager, why wouldn't the aggregate manager actually be, why wouldn't the service manager and site authority be functions inside of an aggregate manager?
Site authority represents the site. So in other words, if you are somebody who owns substrate and you wish to play in Genie as represented by Orca, you can start up your own site authority and fill out a configuration file which lets you delegate some or all of the resources that you want to Orca.
Okay,
so that's the function of it. It allows you to separate the authority so that you can give the resources and you can also take them back if you don't renew your lease to the broker.
Okay, so I'm just making sure I'm current with things. And Ben, the site authority, does it reside at each of your node sites?
That's the plan, yes. There's going to be a site authority for each site, plus there will be a site authority for Ben network substrate. Not the whole thing, the network elements and the fiber. And then we have the VMs, so that's what's shown here. So you see there's a site authority for RANC VM, there's a site authority for Duke VM, and then there's a site authority for Ben, which is responsible for all these.
Okay. And you view each of those as an aggregate manager?
These are all aggregate managers, that's correct. Right, we don't view it that way. We view Ben as a collection of resources with multiple aggregate managers responsible for different parts of it.
Okay. And the service manager there's an aggregate management type of role for the service manager.
So service manager understands the logic of stitching the resources together, right? So for instance, if you are a layer three researcher, and all you're worried about is carrying packets with, you know, maybe some bandwidth associated with a few paths, then you absolutely don't care how the circuits that carry those packets underneath you are set up, right? And so you may need one type of slice controller or service manager. If you are an optics researcher, when you do care about, for instance, diversity and the specific fiber paths that your slice takes, your slice controller has to be completely different. It has to understand your requirements, and it has to do the slice computation according to your requirements. We feel that the slice computation really mostly resides here, not in the broker. The broker is just an accountant. It just knows who used what. But it's up to you to figure out what it is you need to use.
Okay, so one final question. So somebody's bringing an aggregate or a collection of aggregates into Orca.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to have to potentially develop drivers.
Yes, that's for sure. Right, so they will need to know they will need to deploy a site authority, most likely. And then the site authority will need to be configured to which broker it actually is talking to, because I simplified things a little bit when I said a broker is a clearinghouse. It's not exactly true. A broker is a container of a policy. And you can have multiple brokers within clearinghouse depending on the different policies associated with different types of resources. Right, so the way you allocate VMs is not the same the way you allocate VLANs. So we, in fact, have two brokers. We have a VLAN broker and we have a VM broker. And they actually look very similar because in the end, it's more like, you know, first available resource is grabbed first. But that's just for now. You know, you can have more sophisticated allocation mechanisms, policies.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
That intersection involves all these functions on here, including the broker and the source.
I think that we're mostly true to the statement you just gave, because you can see broker actually isn't talking to the substrate, right? It talks to site authorities. The only thing that talks directly to the substrate through the drivers, or the only two things, are a slice controller and a site authority / aggregate manager.
So if I bring in something totally different than what you have up here in your boxes.
Mm-hmm. There may be effects going to all of them, yes, because your slice manager, your slice controller will need to understand your new substrate, right? Your broker may need to have a policy to understand how to allocate this new substrate, and obviously your site authority has to have some knowledge of this new substrate, so yes. Right.
I just want to make sure that whenever we...
Well, these are all pluggable pieces. So you have to remember, you don't have to rewrite the entire broker. What you need to put in is a policy, which is a well-defined interface. It's in Java, which you need to implement to actually create an allocation policy for that type of substrate. So you don't have to rewrite this whole thing. Same thing here. The site authority, again, that you may need to do is add another resource type. At a minimum, it needs a driver and a handler. If they're similar enough to what we have here, if it's something completely different, then it has to propagate. Again, mostly in the form of policies. It's not a fundamental change of the architecture. It's just an implementation of new types of policies, which are meant to be pluggable.
With that, we'll probably have to cut off the conversation.
Sure.